thank you for invitation and opportunity to give here this talk. So, in fact, what I planned to do was indeed to present a kind of interaction between some recent directions in signal processing and what and the qualitative theory of differential equations, in particular, study of center focus problem, and so on. No, in fact, I was not able to compose the talk in a reasonable way. I mean, to present both mathematical parts seriously. So instead, but I do believe that the relations are indeed very non-trivial, and I was happy to see that these relations exist. So I'll do a little bit different thing. I'll take maybe 10-15 minutes to show you one absolutely practical application of image processing. Then I'll explain how does how do systems of nonlinear equations appear, not exactly this application, but then I simply switch to center focus problem without mentioning any signal processing anymore. Okay, so what I'm going to present now is a kind of application we are preparing in our group working on image processing. It is called photoanimator. You see here the site of photoanimator. Now, what is it? Its goal? The goal is to give anyone an opportunity to easily prepare animation from a picture. So you have a photo like here, and dream we hope to somehow to put here is just by one touch of just by one click to make this figure dance. And it is possible. I will show you this thing, but more important to explain what is very difficult and still we cannot. So I start with mode which is interactive mode. So because it explains what is going on. Here is the picture. Here is the picture. I mean, photo of a person. But the most important story is this model. We have a model. Prepared is a library model, and let's say in our library we have today two models, but maybe later it will be tens of models. So this model knows to dance. There are also library animations for this model. So what we really need and what is the problem is to put this model or to fit exactly as far as we can this model onto the picture. So this is a pure problem in image processing, and of course we would like to do it automatically. Now, why it is difficult? This model has about 35 kinematic parameters. Let me show you these parameters. And this is interface of our site, because now I'm in the interactive mode, and we give just the possibility to the user to fit it manually. So let me show you how I fit it manually, and you will see some of these kinematic parameters. First of all, these are, of course, translations and rotations. So I fit it. And you know why it is easy, because the pose is fits the model. It's much more difficult when the pose is free. Okay, now I can fit approximately hands. Of course, I can go closer. Let's say this is more important. I'll try to fit joints. I'll not do all this story accurately because it will take a little bit too much time. So all these are degrees of freedom of this model, and they are used in fitting and also in a further animation. Okay. Now, here I'll just illustrate. Here we have an additional hundreds of degrees of freedom which allow for a fine fitting of the contours. And now let me do the next step, which is a little bit fitting is an automatic procedure. So I would like to improve my fitting. Let's hope it works. Okay, it worked reasonably, and now it will dance. Wake up. So. Et voilà. Okay. Okay. Now I go to automatic mode. It was checked. I know that this automatic system will work, I hope. So I simply one touch, wake up, and so all this model fitting is done absolutely automatically. So this part of the story is really is a kind of mathematical challenge, because as you can imagine, it is done in the following way. The steps are the following. First, we make an edge detection here. Then we try to minimize the discrepancy between the model contours and the edges. And it is a nonlinear minimization problem with 35 kinematic parameters and hundreds of contour parameters. So it's out of, a nonlinear problem optimization of this size doesn't work. It's here is a lot of work of the sort of grouping the parameters, making hierarchy of parameters, and so on and so forth. So this is a difficult story, which I would like to ready to present, but it is not related to what I wanted to do. So let me just show what we can do further. From the moment when the model is fitted, I can put it into any library animation. So maybe another one. Okay, these animations are old one. In fact, we did by themselves by now. I'll show later a couple of animations prepared by professional animators. So this is more or less the story. So let me show you a couple of animations, and then I'll return here and I'll try to explain shortly where is the, what is the relation. Okay. So, okay, let's start with this one. It's called I'll Bring You All the Flowers in the World. Okay, of course it is assumed to be a kind of greeting card, moving greeting card or whatever. And the point is that you can put here, you can invite your friend. And I have invited my friend Vladimir here. Okay, very recent animation. I just got it yesterday. It's still no music. Okay. So this is a kind of the story. So let me return for a moment to this. I'll go back to the interactive mode, and let me take this Okay. So let me return to this problem. Now I just would like to bridge this application with systems of nonlinear equations and so on and so forth. Now I must say it is not here. Here it is. I don't see any need for this. Now a little bit strange problem, which probably doesn't exist in reality. But let's assume that we have the same task of putting this model, nonlinear model, of fitting the parameters. It's a, of course, well-known problem in nonlinear. Sometimes it's called nonlinear regression, whatever you want. But let's imagine that we don't have an image. Instead, we have some integral measurements of this image, Fourier coefficients of it. Why so? Of course, it is not a realistic setting of the problem for this specific task. But if you speak about computer tomography, you can imagine that the model is not the model of a human person, but a model of maybe some object or something. And if you speak about computer tomography, this is what we get, because Radon transform is a kind of integral transform which is mathematically equivalent to Fourier, Fourier data. So we have just Fourier coefficients. So the question is, how can we have certain number of Fourier coefficients. Is it possible to reconstruct the parameters of this model? And it is not an easy task. And you know the structure of this model, but if you just substitute the parameters of this model into the Fourier equations, you get a system of highly nonlinear equations. And this is done in image processing today. In many applications, the direction is called algebraic sampling sometimes. This is the idea. Now, let me switch this out. I'll show you the one-dimensional version of this story. And probably this will be pretty clear that indeed in one... Okay, so here we have a two-dimensional problem. A model with contours and image with its edges, whatever it is. What would be a one-dimensional analog? Probably you will agree with me that the model of this type is just a piecewise smooth function or something like this. Let's take even easier case. And presentation, and it works. Let me give you an example of what is called algebraic sampling. Of course, it's an oversimplified example, but not too much. I mean, in many practical problems, roughly this is done. So we assume that we have a priori knowledge of the type of our signal. Our signal g of x is just some I from 1 to n, ai, delta of x minus xi. So it is a linear combination of delta functions. This is our a priori information. What we do not know are the coefficients, the amplitudes, if you want, ai, and the positions, xi. Now, let's assume that our measurements are just the moments. What we are allowed to measure, mk is a more integral ab, x to the power k, g of x dx. So these are our measurements. This we know. So what we do, we substitute this symbolically. Let's substitute this expression. This is our a priori knowledge. Let's substitute it symbolically. Then we get immediately the following. This is equal to sum a from 1 to n ai xi to the power k. And this is equal to the measurement beta k. So the right-hand sides are known. This is a system of equations. And now Daniel yesterday in his talk saved me a work to convince you that this is related to differential equations, because this is one of the equations he explicitly wrote yesterday. It is sometimes called in signal processing Prony system. It appeared in the work of Baron de Prony in 1795 on hydrodynamics. This system appears whenever you want. It appears, of course, in Padé approximation, in numerical analysis, in Gauss quadratures. Of course, it's not a good idea to solve it as a nonlinear system. You can do it. You can do root tracing or whatever, but it is not a good idea. A good idea is to linearize it, and this is, can be done in framework of Padé approximation. It is easy, but let me not to go into this direction, because I would like to stop here. Just we do work practically on systems of the same type in two dimensions, because two dimensions is the main challenge. Of course, not for animation, but for computer tomography, MRI and stuff like this. So you probably will agree or believe me that in two dimensions we get similar equations, much more complicated, but similar. The structure is pretty similar. So in two dimensions we get equations even closer to what I'll present later, to this generalized algebraic moments. So the relation is I believe the relation between these two fields is absolutely non-trivial. And it may be, I hope it may be productive. Okay, this is the first the image or processing or signal processing part of the story. Now I switch completely to the center focus problem. Okay. Okay, we consider Abel differential equation y prime is equal p of x y squared plus q of x y cube. And we pose the following two problems. Center focus problem is the conditions for y of a to be identically equal to y of b. We take two points a and b. And by some strange reason, we want all the solutions to return to exactly the same. So this is y of a, this is y of b, and we want it to be exactly the same. Of course, it is not, it's pretty natural if a and b is 0 and 2 pi, and the coefficients are periodic, you will believe that this equation is just the result of blow up of polar coordinate substitution in the vector field on the plane. But let me know, it's called Cherkasov transformation, a little bit more tricky than just a polar transformation, but let me not to go into this direction. I'll not explain direct relations with the classical setting of the problems. So let's take the center focus, this one. And Hilbert 16 is how many, so this is one. How many periodic trajectories one may have? Periodic means that y of a is equal to y of b. So exactly as on the plane, in the case of where it is no center, we ask for isolated trajectories, which can be called limit cycles or whatever you want. Okay, so this is the setting I would like to consider. Now, a couple of words, why to consider this equation? Okay, I think, no, besides the fact that if we put P and Q trigonometric polynomials in the interval 0 to pi, then in fact we capture a good piece of the classical vector field theory on the plane, besides this fact. There is by now enough experience, I think, to with this equation. It was started at least by Linz-Netter, by Steve Smale's group. It was, these problems were investigated. So enough experience to believe that these two problems are very difficult. Of course, when we discuss such difficult problems, there are no evidence that assume we can solve one of these. It doesn't imply immediately that we can solve the classical problems on the plane. But still, The experience we have today suggests that these problems are very difficult. On the other hand, this equation presents a lot of technical simplifications, a lot of technical simplifications in comparison with the plane setting. So it may be a good idea to push your problem to the easiest one, easiest example where it is still non-trivial. All this, of course, is not really mathematical reasoning. It's a kind of justification, but it seems that it works. And I'll try to present today some technical facts which indeed justify this approach. We know a lot about this equation, and somehow the structure is very transparent and easy, and there are a lot of relations with various fields like classical moment theory, and now it seems that because of the work of Bruden and Panasolo, some relation with highly non-trivial algebra starts to emerge. I hope there are justifications for this. Okay, so this is a setting. Another question, of course, immediate is what classes of P and Q to allow. And this is also a good question. In fact, until very recently, in our group we considered only two types of P and Q: usual polynomials and trigonometric polynomials. Trigonometric because this comes from the classical problem on the plane, and usual polynomials because it brings some technical simplifications, and more can be said. Now, Alex Bruden, in his work at least for the last 10 years, somehow insisted of taking P and Q, I don't know, measurable functions, not measurable functions, okay, whatever you want. And little by little he convinced me that it is well justified. Of course we are interested, after all, in trigonometric polynomials. This is a classical problem. But it may be instructive to see how to separate this into two pieces. One piece is absolutely invariant to the specific form of P and Q, and I'll show that in our problem does allow for such a separation. And second piece requires specific information on P and Q. And in what we can do, in fact, this separation turns out to be extremely natural, because the second part, it turns out, and this I'll explain, the second part doesn't touch this differential equation at all. The second part works only with the moment problems. Well, the first part is absolutely symbolic, and it is related to this Abel differential equation. So this is more or less the story. So another ingredient I need is the composition condition. This composition condition also, it looks very innocent, and it was introduced by Alvash and Lloyd in 89, I think, in their work. Then for a while it was a hope that the condition is like this, that P big, which is integral of P small, and Q big, which is integral of Q small, satisfy the following, that there exist, say, polynomials, whatever else, I don't want to specify it. There exist W, satisfying W of A is equal to W of B, P tilde and Q tilde, such that P of X is equal to P tilde of W of X, and Q of X is equal Q tilde of W of X. So this is a composition condition. This is a kind of change of variable. So I'll not write it. It's very, very easy. If we have this this composition factorization, we can pass to a new variable W. And in this new variable, our equation turns out to be, because of the condition W of A is equal W of B, this equation turns out to be on a curve which returns to the initial point. So in many cases, this guarantees that everything also factorizes. Not always, of course, you understand that in complex cases it may be singularities and whatever it is, and they indeed exist here and must be treated, or at least. But in many, many cases which can be specified, this composition condition implies center. It is a very, very, simple condition. It is so simple that no need to assume here polynomiality. It's enough to have this, okay, to have a chain rule. If we have a chain rule, we can make this substitution and we get that this composition condition implies center. Now, once more, thanks to Alex Brudny, recently it became clear that it is not a correct composition condition. The correct one, I'll not put it here because it's a separate story, the correct one is when we can factorize it in the same way, but W maps the interval AB not to R, but in a certain topological tree. Why so? It's not too difficult, but it is important. This is because this is a condition of vanishing of all the iterated integrals. By the way, it is known condition. It's kind of somehow follows from classical work of Chen on iterated integrals. But once more, for me, Alex Brudny convinced me that this condition is different. And by now we know, okay, it's very, very recent, but let's say it looks like a theorem that this tree composition condition is indeed different from this which I presented here. Until the last year we worked only with this composition, but it seems that it is a kind of misunderstanding. The true point is the following. A true composition is a tree composition condition as introduced by Brudny, but for P and Q entire functions, and we worked till today only with entire functions, polynomials or trigonometric polynomials. For entire functions, these two conditions coincide. For example, for piecewise polynomials, they do not coincide. Seems to be a theorem, but very, very recent. So there is some combinatorics which distinguish between these conditions. So what all this means that today, in strict contrast with the situation half a year ago, or maybe 3 months ago, I don't know what are good classes of P and Q to substitute. So it is a good reason to substitute here, for example, piecewise smooth or piecewise measurable functions which have separate supports. So I mean, we can subdivide our interval into some pieces, and we can require that on each piece either P or Q is zero. Why this? This is because in this case it turns out, it is not too difficult, but it turns out that results of Cohen's theorem are applicable, and results of Daniel presented yesterday are applicable. And the answer is that in this case we do know the answer to both great problems. In this case, we know that center focus is equivalent to composition, and we know exactly how many limit cycles may appear. The answer was given yesterday. It is not too difficult. It just was a kind of very nice observation that two questions are very, very closely related. But I think it's important because not much was known for Abel equation, and not many examples where we can say anything were known. By now we have some bunch of examples where we know a lot. We know complete answers to these two questions. I hope I have presented you a strong shift in our understanding of this story, which happened because of mainly the work of Brudny and Panazzolo recently. I'm sure now that it is one can try to consider to separate the problems as far as possible, and to and to analyze them, and it is well justified. Hopefully, with such a, how to say, new development, we have a good chance to understand something new about all this story. So let me try to separate it. And now, what I present now is a formal, or how to say, symbolic part of the story. So let me call it formal. A formal part. So for a while from this moment, P and Q for me will be symbols. I don't want to know what they are. And it may be well justified to put P and Q maybe in non-commutative variables, some matrices or even absolutely abstract symbolic variables, non-commutative variables. This leads to very interesting algebra, but I'll not go into this direction because this is so recent, I simply have nothing to say yet. Bruden and Panasola have a lot to say, but okay. but about maybe a different problem, so it's not clear what the situation is now. So what is a formal part? It turns out that whatever P and Q are, only measurable, still this equation is analytic in Y. So we can develop the classical, theorem of dependence on parameter. In fact, we can write Poincaré mapping, Psi, Poincaré mapping, which maps Y of A into Y of B. So we start here at a certain point Y of A, we solve our equation and we go Y of B. This is a Poincaré first return mapping, if you want, in our case. And this Poincaré mapping can be represented by a convergent power series. Y plus sum k equal to infinity, Vk of PQ AB, Y to the power k. So let me stress once more that it is absolutely symbolic expression, and convergence is a very basic fact. It doesn't depend on properties, almost doesn't depend. I really don't know. I'm sure by now that you can substitute here delta functions, maybe derivatives of delta functions. So let me not to go into this direction, just you can develop it symbolically, and in most of reasonable cases it presents a convergent power series. Now, what are Vk? Vk turn out to be certain linear combinations of iterated integrals. There is a nice combinatorics besides this. Not too difficult, I mean, in fact, very, very difficult, but what we know is, we know only easy parts of this combinatorics. A are some simple coefficients. Alpha are multi-index of the form 1, 2, 1, 1, 2, and so on. And iterated integral A alpha for this index, for example, is integral AB 1, so it's P, 2 is Q, 1, P, P, Q, and so on. So we just encode iterated integrals from A to B. As you see once more, these are absolutely symbolic expressions. It's not a good idea, at least I say at this moment, to try to, for example, take P and Q polynomials and to open this. It's better to treat it as it is written. So these coefficients are linear combinations of iterated integrals. And it is well known that iterated integrals present a very complicated algebraic structure. In particular, in iterated integrals, you can integrate by parts, absolutely symbolically. Not knowing anything about P and Q, you can integrate by parts. And it turns out that this leads to a very difficult word problem. So it's not new here. So this integration by parts leads to a difficult word problem. And as far as I know, it was studied by students of Lloyd. Some results are known, but not much. So this combinatorics is basically very difficult. Some of the iterated integrals cannot be reduced. And then, what will be important What will be important in this talk is the following, that just by relatively easy integration by part or by using some generating functions techniques, so by pretty natural computations in differential equations, we can get the following conclusion, that in fact, Vk is equal to minus mk minus 3 plus certain expressions. So here Q enters at least twice. And mk, mk is the following moment type expression. Integral of a to b, p big to the power k of x, q small of x, dx. If we consider it, it is still, we are inside this symbolic part of the story. If we consider our equations as equations in these symbols, p and q, then the linear part of the set, what I forgot to say, of course, is absolutely basic thing. Center is given by equating vk 0 for k, 2, 3, 4, and so on. Why this? Because if you look at this Poincaré mapping, the center condition is that it is identically equal to y. So it's an analytic function, convergent series. This means that all the Taylor coefficients are zero. So center problem is equivalent to, is given by this infinite system of equations. Okay. Now, in fact, as we know by these algebraic equations, algebraic, if you want, in these symbols p and q, or if these are polynomials, this will be algebraic in their parameters. If they are piecewise linear functions, this will be polynomials in their parameters. So algebra enters almost in any reasonable setting of the problem. So I'll still keep the symbolic expression. So in fact, by Hilbert finiteness theorem, we need only a finite part of the a finite number of these equations. So how many? Nobody knows. And formally, one can say that this is the center focus problem, to say where to stop. I don't like this setting of center focus problem, because I would prefer to say that center focus problem is to understand the structure of these equations, to understand what really is going on. But formally, one can say that if we could say that here the sequence stops, we don't need more equations. Then formally, this would be a solution of the center focus problem. Just this would be the final set of center conditions, complete set of center conditions. Okay. So this is a formal part of not completely. I would say that this is a kind of miracle, I don't know, that the linear part of our system turns out to be much more handy than the equations themselves. The equations are highly nonlinear. They are linear combinations of iterated integrals, difficult stuff. Moments are also highly non-trivial, but this is something which people know how to work with. There is a very well-developed set of tools which allow you to analyze the moment type expressions. So the fact that the linear part of these equations turned out to be moments was a kind of small miracle. There are a couple of things which I still don't have real explanation. So the second thing is the following. Center equations at infinity. What does it mean? I'll not give you a detailed definition, but these algebraic equations, so we consider the affine part of these equations. As usual in algebraic geometry, we can go to infinity. We can take compactification, projectivization of our affine space. This is a kind of artificial procedure, so it is not unique. We can choose, and it may be a very, very good question how to compactify this set. Let's say that for the most trivial compactification, the most natural one, without waves, without anything, we get another miracle. It turns out that center equations at the infinite hyperplane take once more a moment. Okay, let me put it this way. Let's assume, to simplify the story, that P is fixed and Q variable. So in our center focus, we somehow fixed P symbolically, we consider only Q as a free variable. This is enough at least to explain something. But of course, it is not enough to give complete answers. Okay, so in this setting, if we do it this way, then center equations on infinity take form integral AB, Q to the power K, X, P small of x dx is equal to zero. So these are once more center moments equations, but notice that Q is variable. So in these equations are linear with respect to Q. These equations are highly nonlinear, but still they're moments. Moments is something we can hope to get out. This is another kind of I don't know. Just a fact, an unexpected fact, but these two facts simplified very much the study of the story. And notice that all this is a part of a formal theory. Nothing about P and Q. This is true for trigonometric polynomials, for usual polynomials, for measurable functions, for whatever you want. Okay. Now, because of these two basic facts, that the linear part of the center equations is given by the linear moments, and the center equations at infinity are given by nonlinear moments, of course we are forced to study the problem of moment vanishing. The full center focus problem is vanishing of these highly nonlinear and complicated equations, while to squeeze it between infinitesimal part and infinity, we have to solve only moment equations. So now it comes this moment vanishing problem. We have moments AB, PK of x, Q of x, dx, so these are MK. And we would like to give conditions on PQ for these moments to vanish identically. So this is a moment vanishing problem. And of course, because of this explanation, this is at once the infinitesimal center focus problem for Abel equation. It is the center focus problem at infinity. And it is, whatever you want. So this problem seems to be indeed important. And once more, the story was like, for a long time, we just studied this for usual polynomials, because it was relatively easy. For trigonometric polynomials, it was very, very difficult, but for usual, it also turned out to be difficult. And here, a good progress in very recently was done by Pakovich, who solved completely this problem for usual polynomials. And by now, he has a lot of information for trigonometric polynomials. Now, once more, also in this problem, something very nice happened very recently, last 3 months, half a year. And this I presented here. I'll just shortly remind you the story. So it appeared a bunch of works of Wenhua Zhao, who working in Illinois, somehow relating this problem with there is so-called Mathieu conjecture in representation of finite of compactly groups, and all this is related to Jacobian conjecture. So if you consider a multidimensional version of this problem, for certain kinds of P and Q, Zhao claims that it is not far away from Jacobian conjecture. I'll not try here to give more precise information. I hope I know today a little bit more than I knew 2 months ago when I presented this story here, but not enough yet to justify another talk in this direction. So let me forget it and just continue this line of of the study of Abel differential equations. So we want to study this moment vanishing problem. One very important ingredient is the following, that this composition condition is so basic, it implies anything. It implies not only center for this, it implies vanishing of these moments, it implies vanishing of all the iterated integrals written here. So what happened? And now I'm, how to say, very puzzled, but this is another kind of miracle, or maybe better to say mathematical puzzle, which I still cannot really answer. What is going on is the following. It is classically known, but for me it was explained by Alex Brudney, that composition condition, this, or better, this tree composition condition, is a necessary and sufficient condition for vanishing of all the iterated integrals. This is the classical chain theory. So, no, that's it, the point. Composition condition is necessary and sufficient for vanishing of all the iterated integrals. Now, these specific moments present a very, very tiny part of all the set of iterated integrals. Only one piece of them where Q appears exactly once. So this kind of a puzzle is the following. How it could be possible that this tiny part of iterated integrals vanishing would imply composition, which in turn implies vanishing of everything. But it happened. I mean, in many cases it does happen. And by now for me this is a puzzle. Historically, I mean, when we started work with this, it was a good luck for us because we didn't notice that it is extremely strange story. But we simply exploited it, and this gave, I'll explain why, this gave a lot of possibilities to analyze the center focus equations. But by now, I'm really puzzled because this set of moment equations presents a very, very tiny part of all the iterated integrals. Still, in many, many cases, as I know today, this moment vanishing implies composition, which in turn implies vanishing of all the iterated integral center or whatever you want. So this is a puzzle. I realized that this is a puzzle just very recently, so I don't have any answer. I just can summarize the story. So let's call P definite. So this is two, moment vanishing. P is definite if two implies composition condition. Of course, it depends in what class. Now it turns out that for usual polynomials, composition condition is a very, very good approximation of this moment vanishing. Even so good that for many years we believed that it is equivalent. And even not only believed, even claimed in papers, it turned out not to be equivalent. Pakovich found that counterexamples. But his final answer is to this question shows that it is very close. In fact, why not? I can give a complete answer. So Muzhichuk-Pakovich theorem. Theorem is the following, that for PQ polynomials, usual polynomials, MK vanishing is equivalent to the fact that Q is equal to Q1 plus Q2 plus QL, where each Q, each QG satisfies composition condition with P, but possibly with different W's. So because of subtleties of composition algebra, it is not equivalent to the usual composition condition, and this turned out to be very difficult theorem. I mean, a lot of algebraic tools, representation theory over rationals, finite group theory, whatever you want, was used by Pakovich and Muzhichuk to prove this result. But in fact, it turns out that generically, nothing like this can happen. For example, let's assume that P is just isn't indecomposable. It doesn't have a composition factor. Then Pakovich theorem shows that it cannot be many terms here because each one has its own composition factor. So the only answer is that Q is a function of P, so composition. In fact, Pakovich theorem allows us to give complete characterization of P of definite polynomials. This is also very recent, so I'll not write as a theorem. I'll say it, not to leave. The answer is the following: polynomial P is definite if and only if it doesn't have two different right composition factors satisfying W of A is equal to W of B. This is it seems to be a direct consequence of Pakovich-Muzhichuk theorem. So, but now it's for me maybe a very big puzzle, because why for polynomials is this moment vanishing turns out to be so strong? Now for trigonometric polynomials, Pakovich has a lot of results. In particular, for P generic, once more, this implies composition, also for trigonometric polynomials. But the notion of genericity is different. So the story is not as good as for usual polynomials. Now, after this recent work of Brudny, I started to analyze it for piecewise linear functions. Why not? And it turns out that for generic piecewise linear function, once more, moments imply three compositions, this which I didn't define today. So we have a strange situation, a kind of a puzzle. Why a tiny part of iterated integrals, vanishing of this tiny part implies through composition vanishing of all the iterated integrals. Okay, now let me just give you. A couple of consequences, and all this is very, very recent. I mean, what I present now is of yesterday. So, no, it's a joke, of course. In partial cases, it was proved for many years, but now it seems that the correct result is the following. Let's so you see, we have a separation. We have this formal story, which is once forever for this Abel equation. Then we have a separate part which asks about moment conditions. And then we just substitute this into this and the story finished. Let me follow all suggestions of Atia, let me write it as theorems with small t. The first theorem is the following. P definite implies that for small q, center focus is equivalent to composition. So we consider our Abel equation, we fix p, and we consider q variable. So the claim is that at least for small q, if p is definite, and no matter polynomial, trigonometric polynomial, piecewise linear, piecewise measurable, I don't know. No matter. If P is definite, then center focus for small q is equivalent to composition condition. This is the first result with small t. The proof is like this. We have a set of algebraic equations. Its linear part are moments. Now, moments vanishing implies composition, which implies in turn vanishing of all the iterated integrals, which are higher order terms. So it is a situation of so-called Nakayama lemma in algebraic geometry. It immediately implies that the set of zeros of the nonlinear equations is equal to the set of zeros of the linear part. And this is exactly what is claimed here, because the linear part consists of compositions. So this is the first result. The second result with small t the dimension of the center set is at most the dimension of non-definite Q. Why is this? So the claim is that we get for free more or less the upper bound for the dimension of the central set. The dimension of non-composition components. Composition components are good for us. We would like to go around. But what are non-composition components? The claim is that the dimension of non-composition components is at most the dimension of non-definite polynomials. Why is this? This is because of this fact that of the center equations at infinity. You see, these center equations now they are nonlinear. But if Q was definite, still by definition this would imply composition. So at infinity, if we can get non-composition only for Q non-definite. So we get a bound, now assume that we have a bound on the dimension of this. Now a fine part goes to infinity. Maybe I must put here plus one, because the fine part goes to infinity and intersects infinity at non-definite polynomials. So we have this bound on the dimension. And one can do much more, many other tricks at infinity or at the a fine part of the center set. So. In this talk, what I indeed wanted to present was the separation of the problems. And so because of this, I will not give you more accurate and maybe more interesting, more difficult results for specifically polynomials, trigonometric polynomials, but just these two observations, how to say, because they illustrate what is going on with the separation. Yeah, so thank you.